Welcome to First Things First. It's Tuesday morning here in New York City. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter.
This Nick right said he here. Didn't like the way I started Nick the show Wright. Yesterday. We had a little meeting and everything. So today I'm okay.
What did you improve from yesterday to today? What got better?
General disposition.
Oh, I thought he was very well disposed.
Well, we don't need to have this is what I did. I changed my expectations for Nick. I dropped them down.
Okay. Oh,
and now
okay.
I'm cool. I'm like, okay.
This so is where I started the show off with two lies.
Yeah.
This is usually Jenna Wolf's corner. So now today, Jenna, I would expect you to analyze how guys are running routes. Precisely. We can all change corners.
Done and done. Look at the size
of
my
hand. Eat that, Nick. Eat that.
And hold the L.
There you go, Jenna. Good to see you this morning.
That was so awkward. Big show today. LeBron still talking about who will be joining him next season. Mm-hmm. Hall of Fame enshrinee Ed Reed will be sitting right there. We'll get him a chair. But we start with the New York Giants' insistence of a plan this coming season. You know, the one that nobody can really see except general manager Dave Gettleman. All right, so the Giants made big news after trading Odell to the Browns a week ago. They made head-scratching news sticking with their 38-year-old quarterback. And yesterday, they put it all together for the most interesting news of all. The reasons why. On a conference call with the media, Gettleman addressed it all, starting with Odell.
After much discussion, we just believed this was in the best interest of the New York Football Giants. I want everybody to know this was purely a football business decision. There's no intrigue. There's no he said, she said, none of that stuff. So let's not waste time with those types of questions after the fact. Some have questioned why we signed Odell and then traded him. As I said publicly twice, we didn't sign him to trade him, but obviously things changed. And frankly, what changed is another team made an offer we couldn't refuse. This narrative that Eli's overpaid and can't play is a crock. I'm telling you. So at the end of the day, you guys got to say Gettleman's out of his mind or he knows what he's talking about when he evaluates players. That's really what it is. That's really where it's at. And I'm okay if you disagree with me. That's fine. But what I'm telling you is, if you turn around and you take a look at what he's making right now and look around the league and see what quarterbacks are making, all right, if you were in my shoes, you'd say, you know what, there really is not. The way he finished the season and what he's making, there really wasn't a decision to make. Really and truly, Pat, you know, very, very honestly, it's not my responsibility to tell you guys what I'm doing. That is not my, just like it's not my responsibility to respond to every rumor that comes down the pike. That's not my job, okay? It's not my responsibility. Trust me, we got a plan. And over time, you know, you've got to be patient. You know, everybody wants answers now. We live in an instant gratification society. Instant gratification world, and everybody wants answers now. Over time, you'll see it. You got to trust it.
I think more so than wanting answers now is I think fans, media want answers, period. All right, Gettleman addressed a number of different things. Odell, Eli, the overall plan. Let's start with Odell, CC. Are you buying the Giants calling the Odell trade a business decision?
Oh, yeah, they can always say that because what's good for business? And can they trust the player? And they felt basically for the New York Football Giants and their brand to move forward, it was best for them from a football standpoint because that's the business they're in. So I put everything into that. When you say a football decision, yeah, football means their character too. Are they going to be at practice? Are they reliable? Also, are they a good football player? Are they good in the locker room? So those are all good football decisions. There is no off the field in professional football. Once you start playing professional, you're on the clock 24/7. So I can understand exactly what he's saying. But he's not telling the truth. Because if he was telling the truth, when Odell, well, since he's been there, basically, he's tried to trade Odell. He approached it last offseason with his friend, John Dorsey, with the Browns. Like, they were talking about it. Now, Dorsey was a little consumed with trying to get Baker Mayfield or the right quarterback, but they had conversations. You can read it. They talk about them talking about this deal in last year's combine, not this year's combine. So I can't believe everything that he's saying, but he is right. It's not his job to tell us every move that he's doing. But for a long, long time, he's tried to trade Odell Beckham, and Odell felt like he was going to get traded he felt like he couldn't make New York a home. So did he make some mistakes along the way? Yes. If I want to revisit history, yes, he did. But Dave Gettleman, I don't believe he's telling the truth here 100%.
When we get to the Eli part, I don't think he's telling the truth on Eli either, but that might be above his pay grade. The Eli stuff might be over his head.
No, and it is above his head.
Okay.
I mean, it's fairly obvious. The last coach that was there benched Eli. How long did he last with the Giants?
He got fired a few weeks later.
Right. The general manager can't do that because the general manager was fired also.
And so the point I'm making is, if you, and we'll get to the Eli stuff, if you can't tell the truth on Eli, then it would behoove you greatly to tell the truth on Odell Beckham. And the idea that Odell getting rid of, you got an offer you can't refuse, you got a Godfather offer, so you got the 17th pick, the Browns had 2 third-round picks, they gave you the worst of the two, and a first-round safety they had given up on, saying, we looked at this like 2 first-round picks because once upon a time, Jabril Peppers was first overall, was a first-round pick. Once upon a time, Trent Richardson was the 3rd overall pick of a draft. He's in the AAFL now. Like, that's silliness. This wasn't a, oh, my God, I can't believe the offer we just got. This wasn't someone coming, the RG3 in the trade, in the draft offer where it's 3 firsts, 2 seconds, 1/3. It's like, we have no choice. That's just nonsense. And the idea that the New York Giants will be better on the field without Odell Beckham, all evidence points to the opposite. In games he's played, they've won 50% more than games he hasn't. Eli's been a better quarterback with him on the field. They've scored more points with him on the field. We know that they're better as a football team with Odell Beckham, and we know they didn't get what the Steelers got for Antonio Brown, 30 cents on the dollar, but they certainly didn't get 100 cents on the dollar for Odell Beckham Jr. We know that.
And you have to assume that if the Eli situation was above Gettleman's head, maybe the Odell one was, well, maybe that was a merit decision as well. But let's get to the Eli. What did you make of what Gettleman said about Eli and how the fact that they don't think he's worth it as a 38-year-old quarterback is a crock?
Well, the thing about it, when he talks about the money part, and you say you look around the NFL, Eli Manning, you're paying that number. Nick has that exact number, what, $23
million? He's the 7th highest cap hit amongst all quarterbacks, $23.2 million.
So you can look at it cap or you can look at it real dollars. They don't look at it as if they're spending too much on the quarterback because of their overall respect for him. That would have to be what it is because he hadn't been a Pro Bowl level quarterback for at least 5 years, probably longer than that. So I can understand when an organization, because this is not about how good is he right now. Kobe Bryant, at the end of his career, man, he demanded every single dollar from the Lakers. How much was he making at the end, Nick?
What, over $35 million.
Yeah, and he wasn't nearly the player, but he wasn't going to take a discount either. It was for time served. Now, him and Kobe are not in the same stratosphere as far as athletes, but relationship to an organization, that's what's important here.
It was a lifetime achievement award.
This is the Mara family. This is what they've decided to do with Eli. They don't want Eli playing for another team. They want him retired New York Giant. And they feel like Eli and all those others that were responsible for those two championships, he's got much respect for them. The family does. So that's all this is right now.
And I understand that part of it. But even there, when he says, look at what other quarterbacks are making. Well, I just told you. It's the 7th highest cap hit amongst quarterbacks. Now, it's $17 million in salary, so we can do cash versus cap, all that. I understand that because part of that's the signing bonus that's been prorated. When he says, look at how Eli played over the end of the year. Well, what sample are we talking about? The final 3 games where he had 3 touchdown passes and 6 turnovers? That can't be what you're talking about. Are you talking about the final 8 games of the season where he was better than the first 8 games but still bad? Like, we know what Eli is. The idea that Eli is old and at this point a well below average quarterback is not a crock. It is the facts we have been leading to over the last 5 years. Eli Manning, the year before Odell got there, had the lowest passer rating in football and the most interceptions in football. He then had a 3-year period that you could argue was the best 3 years of his career, in large part because Odell Beckham Jr. was on the field with him, and Odell was healthy in those 3 years. Since Odell's been out of the lineup all of 2 years ago and part of last season, Eli has been the quarterback he was trending towards 5 years ago. which is a well below average quarterback who has had two unbelievable playoff runs. And he, Gettleman, I do feel for him in this regard. That I do think's over his head. I don't think the Beckham thing is. Because if the Beckham, if you can't pick the trades, you can't pick the quarterback, if you, then what are you doing? Like then the owner is the GM. So I don't think the Beckham thing was above his pay grade. But the Manning thing clearly is, but he's not even telling a consistent story on that. And I think these quotes, just like we didn't sign Eli to, we didn't sign Odell to trade him, was thrown against him. Well, I think these quotes are going to be run back when it says, you guys say Eli's old and overpaid. That's a crock. Okay. Well, we'll have 16 games to find out.
All right. So all that being said, do you trust Gettleman's plan? Do you trust the Giants' plan moving forward, C?
Man, I have a lot of faith in the Giants because I've seen them operate, and they've operated with a great deal of patience. But I'm just going to – I'm a little – timid as far as what their future is, because they don't have a future with Eli. Now, they might love their past, but, man, the NFL, the past is the past. It's about what are you going to do in the next 3 years. They don't have a quarterback. I believe in Barkley as a running back. They got to beef up their offense line. I believe he's going to be a superstar, but the way this team, I need to see more positive things. Now, do I think he can run a team and pick talent out and evaluate that? Yes, absolutely. No disrespect to that, but as far as the Giants' ownership and him coming together on a plan going forward, when you give up on Odell Beckham, like, because every draft pick, every other player, you're taking the chance hoping that he becomes a player one day. So, I wouldn't say I have as much faith in the Giants I've had over the years, because they have proven with their patience they're worthy of that trust. But right now, they are at a fork in the road. And Dave Gettleman is driving the car. Is he going to make the right turn? That's what I can say. The Mara family, I still have faith in them and what they do and what they believe in as people.
And when we say, do we trust the Giants' plan, I would like to know what the plan is. Because if someone
comes to you.
That's
not my job, though.
Right. If someone comes to you in your personal training capacity, Jenna, and says, I want to cut weight and I also want to add a lot of bulk. It's like, wait, huh? You pick one of the two. Right. We want to rebuild and we want to contend. Okay, well, if you want to do everything, you want to do nothing. And so that there are teams in the league that we know specifically. We think we're taking a step back this year to take a step forward. We think we're in win right now mode. We're trying to take the next step to make the playoffs. The Giants are trying to have it both ways.
Right.
We're rebuilding and we want to contend and we want to hold on to the past and we want to look to the future. That is not a plan.
Except that Gettleman would not use the word rebuild. He said, we're not rebuilding. We're actually building.
No one wants to hear that word.
Correct. All right, we got to take a break. We'll talk a lot more about this. Chris Caney's going to be here coming up in a little bit. But on the other side, could the Dallas Cowboys add a three-time All-Pro? That's next on FS1. You can always check us out on the Fox Sports Channel on SiriusXM. We will be right back. We'll get to the Cowboys and Eric Benningberry in just a second. But first, Nuggets and Celtics. Kyrie Irving mismatched with Mason Plumlee, and he nails the jumper.
Man, the Nuggets got to stop letting Mason Plumlee get put out on an island out by a three-point line. It's the second time in 3 days we've seen somebody do this to him.
That's what the NBA game is about, man. Pick and roll.
Yeah.
Get the mismatch.
Warriors, Spurs, and Steph Curry from 60 feet out the buzzer beater to end the first quarter.
Steph and Klay should have shot more shots from beyond half court last night.
Not great last night.
It was an odd night where they were both off, Klay in particular. But this tied the game up at the end of one. And credit to Steph for not caring about the field goal percentage. A lot of guys in the NBA in the last few years, they wait until right after the horn to throw this up so it doesn't hurt their percentage.
How far do you think that is, Nick? How far?
94 feet, so 371 feet.
Yeah, try 61. Longest shot made this season.
Oh, you knew the answer? You
just set
me up? You said.
I said 60.
Uh huh.
But it shows how much you're listening. Uh-huh. Heat and Thunder. Goran Dragic finds a cutting Derrick Jones Jr. for the two-handed flush.
I thought dude broke his left arm when he. When I was watching the other side, I was like, what the heck happened
to
him?
Oh, you thought it, like, dislocated all?
Yes. I was like, stretch Armstrong, go, gadget, get it.
Oh, here we go.
That's your
now
guy,
everyone's
right?
Stealing the
trying to get your wife in the show.
It's Danielle's line.
Oh,
moving on
goodness.
To the Dallas Cowboys. After a very quiet start to free agency, it appears Dallas may be getting back into the game here. Eric Berry will reportedly visit Dallas this weekend. He needs a job. Cowboys need a safety. Berry spent most of last season on the Chiefs bench recovering from an Achilles tear, but he made the All-Pro team 3 of his 8 seasons in KC before that. CeCe, how much would this signing help the Dallas Cowboys?
Man, if you tell me where Eric Berry is, and I'm not a fair person to ask. I think sometimes you need to let the public in on a little something. Like, I've known Eric Berry since he decided to leave Tennessee. Had a training company that trained with Eric. Most of the trainers, I've been knowing them since they came out of college, gave them their first opportunity. So his training staff were people that I know. So I got a chance to know Eric Berry. Got a chance to train with him, right next to him, for a number of years. But the most impactful thing about Eric Berry is when I saw him recovering from cancer, and he was out there training, trying to make a comeback into the league. Still, you could see the effects of the chemotherapy. He had on a wool skull hat. It was 95 degrees in South Florida because he didn't want people to feel bad for him because he had lost all of his hair. And just seeing what he was doing, there were certain points during the workout that he would just cry. And it wasn't out of sadness. It was about, man, the opportunity to be able to play the game. So my commentary on Eric Berry, it might not be the most professional, because I've seen him. I've touched him. I know how much he wants to play. I know what kind of great guy he is to have in the locker room. And I know, I saw all those three all-pro seasons.
Man.
He was phenomenal. He can run. He runs like a 4.38 at his best shape. He works out. He loves the game. He's a great leader. He's like a silent assassin. He doesn't say a whole bunch, but he's got people's attention because he doesn't mince his words and everything. So Eric Berry, he's an asset to any organization. He would be the best safety they've had in Dallas in a few years because they need another playmaker. And I just believe if he's able to get in a situation, there's more talent around him in Dallas that if he's able to get healthy. And I don't know. Richard Sherman came back from an Achilles, had a good season in San Francisco. Eric Berry, in the process of coming back and maybe rushing to come back, developed some bone spurs around the injury. So it's been very, very difficult in this last return. But if there is one guy, if you say, I'm going to take all 1,700 players in the NFL, and you're going to bank on one guy making some miraculous type comeback, it's this guy.
Well, this is not the show for unbiased Eric Berry commentary. I didn't know him since he was 17, but I know him since he was 21. I know his family. I was with him in Kansas City. I've spent time with his parents. This guy is one of the best people in the league. And Chris mentioned silent assassin, but emotional leader of that Chiefs defense when he was there and even when he was injured. The last full season he played in 2016, he was the best safety in the NFL with respect to Earl Thomas. It was the best year of his career. It was his third All-Pro year. He had already recovered from an ACL in his second year in the league and cancer, as C mentioned. And then the first game of 2017 on one of the biggest plays of the game, a game-changing play against the New England Patriots on a fourth down, if I remember, he popped his Achilles. And that was the last time we saw the real Eric Berry. If he's healthy, he would be the best safety on the Cowboys roster. If he can stay on the field, he is what he has shown every year of health is a bad season for Eric Berry, is the Pro Bowl.
But how big is that if?
Well, it's as big of an if as there is for any player in the league right now. He's played in two and a half, really, a half a game, and one full game over the last 2 years. That's the reality of it. And so if anyone can come back from an Achilles, it's a guy who came back from cancer to become the best safety in the entire NFL. And he will work at it. He already is the highest paid safety in NFL history. He got multiple big contracts. His first contract was on the old rookie wage scale. He got super paid, and then he got a franchise tag, and then got a monster new deal. And the first game under the new deal, he popped his Achilles. But last year, it was the heel with the bone spurs. They couldn't get him on the field. The Chiefs fans thought, oh, they're just being real cautious. They're waiting for the stretch run. No, he couldn't get out there. And so he's going to have to go prove it somewhere. But I am rooting for him. This is a guy that he's one of my favorite people in the NFL, and we know how good he is when he's healthy.
So, see, let me ask you from the Cowboys' perspective, because of what Nick laid out, his history with injuries, does it behoove them then to sign him to an inexpensive short-term contract? Wouldn't that fit into their plans? Because you know how much they do have to sign this season.
Well, they do need a playmaker at safety, but they do have a number of needs as far as players in-house. Don't have a lot of cap space. They needed Jason Witten. They just threw him a few million dollars like they weren't going to need that money. They needed Jason Witten last season when their tight ends weren't developed and Amari Cooper hadn't come to the Cowboys. That's when they tried to get him back. So for me, I believe that money will not be well spent. But, yes, that's where Eric Berry is in his career. He's going to have some type of faith in the organization, yes, to sign a deal with a small base salary, very few guarantees, and have the incentives where if he plays to a Pro Bowl level, he'll be compensated like one.
The Kansas City Chiefs, while they wouldn't say this publicly because of how great of a member of that organization he'd been for nearly a decade, they clearly don't think he has any football left in him. And I can say that because cap-wise, to keep him was $16 million. To get rid of him was $15 million. They only saved $1 million by releasing him. And so they clearly think that that Achilles injury and the bone spurs that followed the heel issue was essentially a career ender. I hope they're wrong. If you're going to take a flyer on a guy, I'd certainly rather spend a couple million on him than Witten, as you mentioned. But I think any team in the league, just from a locker room leader perspective, is better with Eric Berry there, especially how cheaply he's going to come.
All right, let's take a break and talk some basketball on the other side. Who should the Lakers pair with LeBron this summer? That's next on First Things First. Two-division champ Lamont Peterson takes on Sergei Lipinets on Sunday. That is 6 Eastern, only on FS1 and the Fox Sports app. Time for us to go viral. With the addition of Odell Beckham Jr., Baker Mayfield is poised to have a breakout sophomore season for the Browns. But if football doesn't work out for the 23-year-old quarterback, Baker can always turn to baseball, showcasing a decent swing at Brewers batting practice.
Okay, Baker.
So Christian Yelich, the NL MVP last year, he and Baker are very good friends. Christian Yelich, former Miami Marlin, now Milwaukee
Instagrammed
Brewer.
At him all throughout the run last year.
Oh, really?
Kept rooting for him the whole time.
Jenna is our Instagram update.
I have to be something.
No, you're a lot of things,
lot
Jenna.
Of
Don't
things.
Discount yourself. You're invaluable to the show.
Very much so.
But the Instagram update.
Not so much, but go ahead.
Wow. So much shade the last few days from my partner, Chris Carter.
Stories to start your morning. This seems like a good time to start with stories. Dirk Nowitzki became the 6th leading scorer in NBA history last night, passing Wilt Chamberlain. Nick, how impressive has Dirk's career been?
Somehow he's become historically underrated. He's top 20 all-time guy in NBA regular season and finals MVP. Now the 6th leading scorer ever. Mm-hmm. The 2nd greatest foreign-born player and the greatest European player of all time. What an absolutely remarkable run. And this is the type of career, see, where you're happy it all happened in one place. That he was acquired by Dallas on draft night,
yes,
and stayed there his entire career.
And changed the game. Not only an exceptional player, but how the game is played since Dirk came into the game as far as being a stretch 4, stretch 5, putting a big guy behind the 3-point arc, how it opened up the court. We know players are bigger, stronger, and faster, but because of Dirk, his impact on the game, it's created more space. That's why guys can still score the basketball. Tremendous career.
Moving on to the Warriors now. They lost to the Spurs last night, mainly due to a tough shooting night for both Steph and Klay. Warriors now tied with Denver for the 1 seed in the West. Nick, how big of a deal is this?
I don't think it's a huge deal. I think they will still get the 1 seed. I'll tell you this much. It matters a lot for those teams jockeying for the 3 seed. Well, do you really want the 3 seed if the Warriors end up falling to the 2 line? Or would you prefer be in the 4 line? The Western Conference playoffs are all messed. 5-8 is all close. 3-5, it's confusing up top. This was a night about the Spurs playing extraordinary defense. They had a rough stretcher in the rodeo road trip, see. Since then, they have been on fire, skyrocketing up the standings.
Yeah, Warriors couldn't make a shot. But I believe that number 1 seed, it's important. It's what you want to, just in case you get to that game number 7. And I don't think those teams at the bottom, it's so bundled up, they can't concentrate on the Warriors.
Correct.
Or the Nuggets. But that number 1 seed, you'd like to be the number 1 seed and the chance to build a three-peat.
All right, moving on. The Boston Celtics continuing their up and down season, losing to the Nuggets last night despite 30 points and 4 steals from Kyrie Irving. Boston now the 5th seed in the East, 1 game back of the Pacers. CC, what do you make of the Celtics with 11 games left in the regular season?
Well, I wouldn't want to overreact to this because Denver is a better basketball team. They played more basketball consistently than the Celtics. And then the back end of that, this is what the Celtics do. Up and down, up and down. They're really, really talented. But the cohesiveness never got back what they had last year in the playoffs.
And one of the reasons last year that offense was better than a lot of us expected is they were generating a ton of corner threes and they were knocking them down. I couldn't believe this number I heard this morning. dead last in the NBA in corner three percentage. That's supposed to be the most efficient shot in basketball other than a layup. Celtics can't hit them. And while the Nuggets have been better, this is a game on the Celtics home court the Celtics need, where they're four-point favorites, and the Nuggets were in control throughout despite Kyrie being excellent. Tough game for Jason Tatum. Gordon Hayward didn't play with the concussion. Tough loss for Boston that stifles some of their momentum.
All right, finally, perhaps no one will be under a bigger spotlight than first-year Browns head coach Freddie Kitchens. GM John Dorsey said Kitchens will, quote, hold players accountable. All right, Chris Carter, is Kitchens the biggest question mark for the Cleveland Browns heading into this season?
I think there's just a number of questions when you have a young coach. I think that the ownership, John Dorsey, Alonzo Highsmith, the guys that picked the players, they got the right guy. I mean, you have to look at the people that they turned down. I mean, they could have easily. They thought, because Dorsey was from Green Bay, they thought for sure.
Mike McCarthy.
He's going. I mean, imagine Mike McCarthy coaching this team approaching the season. Will we have these questions about the coach?
No.
What about Bruce Arians? What if he comes out of retirement, which he did, to coach Tampa Bay? What if he was coaching? Would we have those questions? No.
I'm sure both of those guys would love to be getting ready to coach this team.
Absolutely. So the thing about, if we're being honest, we should have some questions at Freddie. Now, for me, I don't have as many questions as other people because I sat down and met with them, covered them in week number 14 of last season, preparing for the Carolina game, and I talked to the players. And the players respect them. And John Dorsey, in looking for a coach, he wanted a voice that these young, up-and-coming players could hear. He didn't want an old voice. He didn't want someone who'd been in the NFL who he thought maybe there was a disconnect between their overall youth and what they're looking at compared to a young. And he had a lot of confidence in Freddie because put under the tremendous strain he was under last year, taking over for Hugh, Todd Haley out the door. It was like a coup in the building, but Freddie Kitchens won. But he won over that locker room by the things he said. I was very comfortable with his press conferences. As a first-time coordinator, I know in talking to Baker Mayfield, Baker thinks that he is the guy that's going to make him the type of player. So, yes, I'm confident in Freddie Kitchens, but there will be bumps along the road. Even if he had 10 years experience, there are going to be bumps with this football team. We should expect that.
And it is, he's a total unknown in this job. And there's going to be questions about anyone in that role. People, I think, have misremembered the very recent history that, okay, so those guys got fired and Freddie Kitchens was the interim head coach. And No. He elevated to offensive coordinator and associate head coach. We've seen in the past where a guy, if someone gets fired midseason, he's the interim head coach, Dan Campbell in Miami. They go on a bit of a run. It's like, hey, should we keep him as the head coach? But at least you saw a few games of him doing the weekly press conference, holding the team meetings. That was Greg Williams' job. So even the Browns don't know what type of head coach he'll be. Now, the biggest reason I think he got the job was because of what we saw from Baker once that Hugh and Todd were out of the building, that Greg Williams took over and he took over the offense.
Yeah, I think it's a little more than just Baker, because their offensive line improved drastically. Their philosophy, how they were, people think, well, the Browns, Baker. No, the Browns started running the ball. They became more physical. And he handled all the personality and all the heat that was coming with being bumped up from a, man, you're just a quarterback coach.
Well, and the offense as a whole, no question about it,
that's
got
why
far
he's there.
Better.
Yes.
And Baker gave him the seal of approval. And Baker clearly wanted him as his head coach. The question for the Browns and the thing that's in the back of Browns fans' mind as a concern is, was the reason the offense got so much better the addition or the subtraction? Meaning, was it that Freddie Kitchens helped elevate everything, or was it that Hugh and Todd was such a toxic situation that just getting them out of the building allowed the offense and Baker and the team as a whole reach what it should have been earlier in the season? You have to greatly hope it's the former, that it was that Freddie Kitchens was a quality add as opposed to you just got rid of the toxicity. But no one should prejudge him. No one should say he's going to be a failure. That would be ridiculous. But it'd also be ridiculous to say, I know he's the right guy to be the head coach. Nobody does.
Or
he's
to
never
say
been head
it doesn't
coach.
Matter because you have so much talent on that team, it wouldn't even matter.
Oh, I think John Dorsey knows. He had a chance. He had the pick of the litter.
But
the job was open all year.
So he went
There's
with
no him. Way you give that roster to a guy unless you have confidence in him. Now, we might not have confidence in him, But John Dorsey has 100% confidence that this is the next great young coach in the NFL.
I'm certain Dorsey has confidence in him.
Well, you said no one has.
I said nobody knows. No. I think you can have confidence in a guy, but I don't think whenever you're making a hire, I think you go with your best bet. The one you're most confident in. But we would be lying.
But it's not just a gut feeling. He was basically the head coach for half the roster for half the season.
Right.
And so it's not a gut feeling.
He has some evidence to support it.
Yes.
But he doesn't know, even when he makes that choice. If he would have hired Mike McCarthy, to your point, you would know the type of team, system, the organizational structure Mike McCarthy is going to bring. He went with a guy who he thinks has bigger upside, a guy who he thinks a better fit for this team, despite the unknown. Now, that might be a testament to what Freddie Kitchens has shown in the building, but he is an unknown, even to the guy who hired him in this job and to all of us, and we'll see over the next few years what type of head coach he is.
All right, let's get back to basketball now. With this season all but over for LeBron and the Lakers, all eyes turn to summer plans and not the fun kind. These plans involve the Lakers trying desperately to pair James with one of the game's top free agents. And there are certainly options out there. Kyrie, KD, Kemba, Kawhi, to name a few. LeBron was asked about this upcoming summer and had this to say.
There's a lot of great free agents in this summer. I'm not going to name any names because every time I say something, our organization says something about a specific person, we get in trouble. But we have an opportunity to get better, and that's that's something that it's definitely great to know that when you have an opportunity to get better from a personnel standpoint.
See, if you're one of the free agent names that I mentioned, what's the appeal? What's the draw to come now to the Lakers and sign with this team, judging by what you saw that happened this season?
Well, my whole lifetime, the Lakers have been a force in the NBA. They only had a few seasons where they were down, but you always knew with Dr. Buss, who owned the Lakers, and now his daughter, Jenny, runs their basketball operation. I mean, runs everything for them. We know Pelinka runs basketball operation, him and Magic. But their family has been about winning championship. She fired her brother 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Because they were so bad. It's about winning. It always has been. When Wilt went there, that's what it was about. When Kareem went there, that's what it was about. And most of these players, they went out and either traded for them or they just outbid everyone else. So I've just seen it. Shaq, man, I've seen it year after decade after decade. This is what the Lakers do. That's what you should be attracted to. They are trying to win championship. They have tremendous resources and the location in Los Angeles. They play in a beautiful arena in a beautiful part of town. Like, there are a lot of positive things about playing with the Lakers. But ultimately, if you can get paid and during your tenure you can compete for a championship, what else is there in the league? Like, that's what playing professional sports is about. And the Los Angeles Lakers, not because of their recent history. I know a lot of people watch the show are young people, but as long as I'm 53, ever since I've been on Earth, the Los Angeles Lakers each decade has presented championship opportunities. That's why if I'm a free agent, I'm looking at the Lakers.
And each decade through free agency or trade has found a way, if not once, multiple times, to acquire an enormous star. It was LeBron, decade before Powell. People forget that Powell was arguably the best center in the league when he came over to join up with Kobe. Decade before Shaq. Then before that, it was Kareem. Before that, it was Wilt. Like, they have always been able to go get superstars and then pair them with the right people around them. The question for the Lakers is, which tier of free agents are we talking about? Are we talking about the top tier? Kevin Durant, Kawhi Leonard, Kyrie Irving? Those are the three top-tier guys. I'd say KD is almost an impossibility. Kawhi, the door could be opening slightly ajar with the Doc Rivers' supposed interest in the Lakers. That would be a big paradigm shift from the Clippers to the Lakers. And Kyrie, we know, is an X factor. Tier two, I think, would be quite good. Wouldn't be tier one. That's Klay, Kemba Walker, and Jimmy Butler. But if you miss out on those top two tiers, and assuming
Anthony... Is the assumption you can win with the top two tiers? You can contend and win?
Oh, I think LeBron plus any of those six guys, particularly the guys on that top tier, would be instant contenders. We have to see what happens with the Warriors. This is assuming Kevin Durant's elsewhere and that super, super team's no longer there. But if you miss out on those top two tiers, along with not trading for Anthony Davis, and then you're talking about tier three, Boogie, Tobias Harris, tier four, Nikola Vucevic, Chris Middleton. Now you're in trouble spot. Now you're talking about your 17 LeBron, a guy you're teaming with who isn't even an actual all-star, just a, you know, a top 35 player in the league. That's where the Lakers would, to me, that would be striking out this summer.
What?
That would be the way I do the players rankings. Is,
oh, see, that's
finds
right.
it funny. I don't think the Lakers should be concerned, but they shouldn't be worried. They have the city, they have the team, they have LeBron. And even if some members of the media want to present this narrative that people don't like to play with LeBron, I'd like to see one player that's played with him come out and say that. Because all we hear from guys, whether it's role players, all-stars, or superstars, is what a great teammate LeBron is.
I don't know if those players exist, but if there was a player, why would he do that? Why would he insert himself into the LeBron conversation and just you know, I'm going to say I wasn't pleased with playing with LeBron. Like,
well, so that's a fair point that maybe that you have maybe reason to stay reserved on it or to stay out of the discussion. But the point I'm making is we haven't heard anybody say that. We haven't heard anybody. We've heard guys that didn't play with LeBron. We hear Paul Pierce all the time. We have guys that have never been on that team say, Kevin Durant say it's a toxic environment. But the guys who have spoken up, who have played with LeBron, have said positive things. Now, maybe there's other guys that are. But
Kyrie did ask out of town, though.
Right. And absolutely. Kyrie asked out of town. And then now.
So that was saying something right there.
And then doubled back to LeBron and said it was a mistake.
Yeah, but I'm just saying let's not forget that.
Well, I don't think anyone
because
in the audience,
when you go to Cleveland management and say I want to be traded, you say I don't want to play with LeBron.
Right, he wanted to go have his own team, and then he realized.
But it was also I didn't want to play with LeBron. It hid under I want my own team, but.
100%. And when you say you don't want people to forget that, I don't think people are forgetting that Kyrie Irving left the Cavs by demanding a trade. Like, I think that's baked into it. I think, but the point I'm making is that we have heard from, I would say, every prominent, Ray Allen, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, Kevin Love, down to guys, bottom of the roster guys, Richard Jefferson,
mid-tier
roster guys.
Lakers might not be concerned, Jenna, but I'm concerned. If the Pelicans don't trade AD there, I'm concerned because we know KD's not coming. We know Klay's not coming. And what if Kyrie decided, you can't depend on Kyrie, so I'm concerned for the Lakers.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, how are the Giants justifying trading Odell Beckham? That's next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First. Look who's here. Like we talked about, Pro Bowl linebacker Bart Scott joins us.
Appreciate you.
What up, man?
What's up, Bart?
Good to
see
you, sir.
Get that one right there, bang.
Yes.
Let's do it.
That's what he said.
Write that down, Bart.
There's been a whole lot of lying going on in New York.
Right,
I'm going to go ahead and
bang.
Be truth-telling today.
The New York Giants made big news, Bart, after trading Odell to the Browns a week ago. They made some head-scratching news, then deciding to stick with their 38-year-old quarterback. Yesterday, they put it all together for the most interesting news of all. We learned the reasons why. On a conference call with the media, General Manager Dave Gettleman addressed it all, starting with Odell.
After much discussion, we just believe this was in the best interest of the New York Football Giants. I want everybody to know this was purely a football business decision. There's no intrigue. There's no he said, she said, none of that stuff. So let's not waste time with those types of questions after the fact. Some have questioned why we signed Odell and then traded him. As I said publicly twice, we didn't sign him to trade him. But obviously things changed. And frankly, what changed is another team made an offer we couldn't refuse. This narrative that Eli's overpaid and can't play is a crock. I'm telling you. So at the end of the day, you guys got to say Gettleman's out of his mind or he knows what he's talking about when he evaluates players. That's really what it is. That's really where it's at. And I'm okay if you disagree with me. That's fine. But what I'm telling you is, if you turn around and you take a look at what he's making right now and look around the league and see what quarterbacks are making, all right, if you were in my shoes, you'd say, you know what, there really is not. The way he finished the season and what he's making, there really wasn't a decision to make. Really and truly, Pat, you know, very, very honestly, it's not my responsibility to tell you guys what I'm doing. That is not my, just like it's not my responsibility to respond to every rumor that comes down the pike. That's not my job, okay? It's not my responsibility. trust me, we got a plan. And over time, you know, you've got to be patient. You know, everybody wants answers now. We live in an instant gratification society, instant gratification world, and everybody wants answers now. Over time, you'll see it. You got to trust it.
All right, Bart, I'll start with you. Is there any reason to trust the Giants' plan moving forward based on everything he's explained and all the moves this team has made so far?
All his plans are contradictory of each other. He's contradicting himself over and over again because he says, you know, he's trying to rebuild, so he's getting rid of Landon Collins, he's getting rid of Olivier Vernon, but then he signs Golden Tate. You know, you talk about a guy you guaranteed that's, you know, $23 million over 4 years, and how can you rebuild when you basically have the same player? Sterling Shepard, Golden Tate operate the same real estate. Why wouldn't you give that money to the younger player? Because when you get your new quarterback and you're ready to win, you have a young player that you trust that's been in your organization that's going to help you win. You know, I think really what this is a mission of that he didn't evaluate his team properly, right? So he thought last year, let's go all in. That's why you make a move like that for Saquon. Saquon is a finishing piece. You know, and Saquon's key in this. Because even though he's a transcendent player, probably get a gold jacket, he's well on his way to being a superstar, they're going to waste his talent, much like Barry Sanders, because he's going to be a great player without a team around him. Because instead of moving on from the quarterback, you already said, okay, you got him, he played well, but then instead of moving away from him, you double down. Right, and you bring back a 38-year-old quarterback. You're talking about he's not overpaid. Well, he makes more money than Cam Newton. He makes more money than Phillip Rivers. And I'll take those guys, you know, before I take Eli Manning any day. And then you want to talk about, okay, well, they got rid of, you know, Odell Beckham. If you add Golden Tate and you add, you know, Jabril Pepper's cap numbers over the next 2 years, that's $21 million. Well, Odell Beckham is like $24 million. So I'd rather have that one great player than an old player and a safety that we don't know what he is, because in college he played linebacker. So the same problems and issues you have with Landon Collins are the same issues you're going to have with Jabril Peppers. He's underperformed. So what are you talking about? See, we had this thing when we were with the Ravens, we called it organized chaos. And we just say, we didn't know what we were doing and they didn't know what they were doing. And that was the beauty of it. He doesn't know what he's doing, and he's going to have to figure it out, and he's making it up on the fly.
Listen, your point that they misevaluated last year is obviously true. No one, even the most ardent Giants fan, can't dispute that. Last year they signed Nate Solder. They signed Omame, a guard that gets forgotten about. 3 years, $15 million, cut midway through the season. Draft a running back. Re-sign Odell. Everything they did last year was about winning right now, and the team started 1-7. And at the trade deadline, they're selling pieces off. So that was a misevaluation. But the other point you make, that the original sin is Eli Manning on this, is clearly true. What was the biggest cause of Odell's frustration? The quarterback. What was the biggest cause of Odell's distraction last year? The interview. What question in the interview? Do you have a problem at quarterback? What is the reason the Giants, it's so hard to believe they are a team that is trying to rebuild? They have a 38-year-old quarterback. And this idea from Dave Gettleman that Eli, well, hey, listen, he's, look at the last half of last, how about we look at the all of last year? Pro Football Focus says, in a clean pocket, 28th ranked passer. Under pressure, 34th. Accurate pass percentage, 32nd. Turnover worthy play percentage, 28th. Like, there is, you can't find a category that he's not in the bottom fifth of the league. There's only 35 qualifying quarterbacks. Now, that decision is almost assuredly over Dave Gettleman's head. That's an ownership decision about what we're doing with a legacy player, arguably the greatest offensive player in the history of the franchise. I get that part of it. But the moves he does have control over, trading Odell, trading away Olivier Vernon, who they signed in the offseason, drafting a running back instead of trading back or drafting a quarterback, those are the GM's decisions, and they haven't been telling a consistent story.
Well, it's hard for me to have faith in the plan because of what I hear. I'm giving them a free piece of advice. Stop having press conferences, all right? You don't see New England Belichick having press conferences talking about personnel like that, because you're only going to make mistakes. Because he said, yeah, it's not his job. It's really not. It's not his job to be able to give out whatever the trade secrets are and what I'm going to do in the future. But if you decide to participate in a press conference, it is your job to say something. And I do believe that you can evaluate talent. I know you don't know how to do a press conference, because you can't continue to actually proceed in good faith and try to let the public know, okay, this is what I'm doing. It's not going to work for you. The Odell Beckham thing went bad with the interview. And Odell Beckham is partially responsible for him getting traded.
Was he telling the truth, though?
You can't tell the truth. When you are a franchise player, you're not getting paid to tell the truth. Eli's not paid to tell the truth. When people made mistakes all through the years, Eli Manning always said, oh, that's on me.
It's covered up for him.
100%. Oh, that's on me. Oh, that's my fault. Oh, I got to play better. Oh, I got to get better. When they asked him, do you like the quarterback? Do you like Bart Scott? As a guest, yes, I like Bart. Man, Bart's starting to get on my nerves. Okay? People do it all the time. He had a simple, it's a quarterback situation. It's good. And move on. That's what you're supposed to do. They're paying you to do that as a leader. But he's been trying to trade him, man, ever since he's got there. He talked to John Dorsey last year at the Combine about trading Odell. He would have traded Odell to San Francisco if they would have given him the number two pick. So trying to act as if, oh, things change, oh, they made him an offer. No, he had a tag on Odell's head, and Odell was not going to be part of them moving forward. So I believe in the Mara family. I believe in them. I really do. They've just had too many years of being good people and good owners, but I don't believe in the current direction that the Giants are going in.
I think the Mara family has been they haven't been playing well. They haven't been good owners because they punted, and I think that was a mandate that you had to keep Eli if you were going to be the general manager. That's why I believe Lewis Riddick wasn't there. Now, Gettleman is an older type of guy. He believes in the Kansas City model, but there's no Mahomes out there. Now he's telling us that he may be in a running for a quarterback. When he just told us last year that those quarterbacks weren't good and then these quarterbacks are supposed to be better when they're not ranked the same. And he's a guy that can't see, you know, that a Kyler Murray could be a transcendent type of player because he's never even drafted a quarterback ever in his career. Right? So he's always inherited a good quarterback. So we don't know what he's capable of doing. We know he's good in drafting people. He's not great talent evaluator as far as bringing in free agents.
How much more do we believe in the plan if they do go out and get a quarterback? How much of this is based around the fact that they're going into this year with a 38-year-old quarterback who didn't really prove that he could still be at the top of
this
game?
To me, like I said, that Eli's the original sin. Drafting Dwayne Haskins can wipe that away to a large degree. I like Haskins more than I like Darnold. I like Haskins more than Baker. Now, I was a huge fan of Josh Rosen. Obviously, he didn't have a great rookie season. We'll see what he is moving forward. So drafting Haskins or buying very low on Rosen. If you can get Rosen to New York for your second-round pick, like, to me, okay, now you are starting to see the plan. Now you are working under the constraints that you have. That's the most fair criticism of Dave Gettleman. Everyone's got constraints at their job from their boss that they're not supposed to talk about, right? That we just got to deal with it. How well do you work given those constraints? Or are those constraints the reason for failure? If the constraint is Eli must be respected, you can't even ask him to take a pay cut. He has to be the starter until he says he's done.
How about that? Man,
those are tough handcuffs. But how well can you work given those handcuffs? If you can't, then what's the point of having a GM? Your job is to do the best given your circumstances. So, long way to answer your question, they get Haskins. To me, that fixes a lot of it. They trade for Josh Rosen. It potentially fixes a lot of it. I don't know that, given his commentary this year, that they seem like a team that wants to package picks to move up. And I don't think Haskins is going to be there at number 6.
All right, Bart, stick around. Coming up, could the Dallas Cowboys at a 3-time All-Pro? That's next on First Things First. Never gets old. That was Ed Reed finding out he was going into the Hall of Fame. Ed is joining us now. Congratulations. Right, welcome. Morning, thanks for getting up.
Big bro.
Appreciated.
Brother, the reaction. Ed, now come on. Now, I've seen you, man.
What's up, man?
I haven't seen any of the Hall of Famers as cool as that. Hey, Dave, I've been waiting on you.
What took you so long?
Everyone is crying. Yeah. I know, man, I blacked out, fell on the floor. Like, what's going through your veins to do that, man?
I was with my family, man. You know, I did expect it. You know, great fans across the country, you know, players, teammates, mm-hmm. coaches, man, you're a Hall of Famer, you'll be there. They just waiting, they just holding it down for you.
Ray getting in the year before, did that help you out with that whole experience?
Yeah, he definitely talked to me and let me know some things that were going to happen. And, you know, I saw Ray right after he went into the hall, and he's explaining stuff right there, you know. So, and Dion been helping me, Derek Brooks, you know, and Brandon Moss talked to us that next morning after we was got the knock, you know. So it's been good, man. A lot of brothers been helping out.
You've always been a sharp dresser, as you see in that video.
Oh,
when you mentioned Ray. Ray was ready. I don't know if he was ready to preach. I don't know if he was ready for a wedding. Ray was as sharp as. Did Ray give you any pointers on? Listen, man, that video is going to be around forever. You're going to show it on things like this. Make sure you have picked out exactly how you want to look for that.
Nah, man.
We haven't gotten that far yet. But I'm just going to tell you the speech part. Yeah. He is not going to be helping you with it. Okay? Because he's still talking. He's on the podium right now.
That is funny. No, he didn't help with that, man. Ray didn't have to, you know. My dad's the guy, you know, who's the sharp dress in my family, you know. So I get it from him.
How much did it mean to you to be included in your class that you're going to be sworn in with?
I mean, it was huge, you know. We got four DBs, two safeties, two corners.
Unusual.
You know, and with Kevin and Tony, you know, it's crazy, you know, to go in with those guys. I played against them. You know, great competitors. I'm still having trouble with Tony, you know, at that size. But, it's just such a great time going in with everybody.
How long after you retired did you start looking at, okay, so it's 5 years, here's who retired with me. Mm-hmm. And there was, I mean, you, we knew it. You, Champ, and Tony were as close to locked first ballot guys as could be. When did this start coming on your mind? Like, oh, this is when I'll be going in, and here's who the guys will be. You didn't know you'd be with Ty and Mawai, obviously, but those two guys. When did you start kind of realizing, wait, this is who I'm going to be inducted with?
Not until they really announced it that I had a, you know, clue that who I would go in there with.
Yeah, when they had the finalist list, I think in, like, October they come out with that list.
Before that, I didn't think about it at all. I was trying to see, I guess, every ex-player kind of counts the plays that he has left in him.
So you were still thinking if you could come back?
Man, I still have it in me, man, you know, just watching this stuff. But, you know, it's just, I think it's just part of it. You know, I think that's just part of it.
Let's see, you won't even look at him.
I think as an ex-player, you just count those plays.
Listen, man, the Dallas Cowboys are looking for safeties and they're bringing people out of retirement. If Witten can get $3.5 million, man, you can get $1.5 million from them.
Yeah,
be an active Hall of Famer patrolling the secondary.
Easily making those plays.
Listen, bro. Okay, just listen, all right? Listen to me. Read my lips.
Go ahead, big bro.
All right? Let's talk about someone who can play. You retire, man.
Yeah.
Man, your cement is dry.
Done.
They get ready to put you into a place, man, the only way it can ruin your bus is if Jesus comes himself. Mm. And you thinking about playing, we're going to talk about some real players. This is what the show's about.
Yeah.
what about Wink Martindale's system there? I know you think you could play in that system, but what about Earl going to Baltimore, bringing that same spirit? You love his game. You love his overall sports character. And what they're doing in Baltimore, still on the defensive side, is still very special.
Yeah. I mean, Earl's a player that I know he is for us communicating and getting guys lined up. That's the key right there. Once that happens, they just play the way he's been playing, play fast. I think he'll be fine in that system. You know, I'm not sure if they're going to play him as strong or free. I always said play boat, you know, and he knows that, you know, but Earl's been kind of locked at that free safety position. So he'll be the quarterback back there. You know, they just got rid of CJ. Mm-hmm. CJ,
okay,
too.
Sure.
Yes.
You know, CJ and Weddle. So somebody's got to be that leader back there to pick them up, you know. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how that works out.
Are you surprised with how much money is being thrown around to some of these safeties that just recently signed?
Not at all. I mean, I watched football when Chris was playing. Those guys made a certain amount of money. You know, I just came back from the Hall of Fame where you see the first actual contract. You know, you see how much that guy made when he first got that check. It's inflation. You know, it's part of it. It's part of entertainment. You know, as a player, when you're in the NFL locker room, you know that's coming. You know guys are going to make more money behind you. You know, so not at all. You know, we pavers. You know, we're pavers. Chris was a paver for me. You know, I was a paver for these young guys. You know, so they just got to know how to handle it. Right. You know, you can throw that money around, but if they don't know how to manage it and handle it, you know, don't have the right people around them, it's going to get taken away like you see some of these guys making bad decisions.
You said something really interesting when you were talking about Earl Thomas, and it probably applies to Eric Berry if he signs on somewhere, Tyrann Mathieu, Landon Collins, about the communication aspect of that position. We often hear middle linebackers, the quarterback of the defense.
Yeah.
You were talking about the responsibility, if you're a great safety, whether strong or free, or as you were both, of being the communicator, getting guys lined up, letting guys know what's coming before it even happens.
Yeah.
Can you expand on that? Because I find that it seems to me that was, you, people remember you for tracking the ball from across the field, but so much of what you did was knowing what was coming before the play.
Those disguises.
And getting guys in position and tricking the opposing quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, we're two people on the field, the safety position, are the only two that can really see all other 21 guys on the field.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not all positions get that view that we get. You know, I've had times when I'm running up telling Terrell Suggs something, you know, what's about to play, or Haloti or Ray, communicating with those guys, because I could see it, you know, and I just think, you know, from my position, you can analyze it a little quicker, too, by seeing the whole formation. That matters. You know, I always tell corners to look across the field so they can see the whole formation before I even have to make the check, you know. So it's just getting guys on the same page, giving them little keys that you can see because you're able to see the whole field.
There are some great Ed Reed stories from opposing coaches and quarterbacks about things you would do within a game, especially for when you're playing the more astute teams, like that you would play a certain play out of position or in a certain spot to set them up for something later.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
was, I mean, I'm not misstating that,
no,
right? Like the
no.
So rather than me talk about Ed Reed stories, can you explain, when you're going up against Peyton Manning or Tom Brady, one of those guys, something you would do early in a game to set yourself up for later in the game?
And one of my favorites is we used to line up weak in the cavity of the defense, looking like you guys were going to stop the run. And right before the snap of the ball, you start undisciplined karaoke, and then you just start running to the other side and you intercept the seam route.
Yeah.
Or you end up helping the other guy on the strong side. I'm like, how did he get there? Like, those are instincts, too, that most people don't have.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I played a lot of football, coached a lot of football. And for that, I mean, it's, like I said, it goes back to knowing the formation, knowing the play, knowing the defense. I would never jeopardize my job for disguise. I always told guys that. Smart receivers like Chris can easily tell what coverage you're in by when you line up. As soon as you come out there talking to the quarterback, it's cover two, it's cover one. It's only so many coverages that we can give, you know. So with that in mind, I'm giving them disguise. I'm lining up on that weak side, making it look like I'm blitzing. But at the end of the day, I know exactly where I'm supposed to be. You got to think. You got to analyze the down and distance, the formation, the personnel group, the time of, on the clock, where you at on the football field, just like that, you know. So at the end of the day, I know what I have to do. So I can run from the line all the way back to the half because I know that's my job, you know. And then with doing that, you see the formation.
Throws them off.
You know where they got to go with the ball, too. And also I know where my help is at as my defense, you know. So it's a lot of factors in because I get guys all the time, man, I want to watch film, I want to be how you. Man, to teach that, that's tough. That's tough to teach repetition. You can't teach repetition.
Ed, I know you mentioned that you were coaching your son this past weekend in flag football. Mike, yes. I was going to ask you how much football you're still watching. I mean, can you believe that sitting around here the last couple weeks talking about the Cleveland Browns as the favorites in the AFC North? My, how things have changed in the last couple of years. Are you following the teams pretty closely?
Yeah, that's still going to be tough for Cleveland because that division is so tough, you know, with Ravens and Cincinnati's still right there. They always just be right there. And you got Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh always figure it out. You know, they have great ownership for a reason.
Yep.
You know, so they always figure it out, though they have a lot going on. I follow football a good bit. You know, but my son, my nephews play, you know, so it's about developing them.
Sure.
Spending that time with them.
Yeah.
Half the time I'm making tacos on Sunday for my son. So,
good.
You know, and he's running outside to play basketball. You know, so, I mean, I follow as much as possible. I don't watch it how we did when we were players. That's the only thing I don't like. Like, I don't get to see the whole 22.
Right.
You know, you're watching it on film, on TV, it's just different.
You're getting the fans' view, which is following the quarterback and the ball, as opposed to the players' view, which is everything that's going on.
Which makes it hard to do interviews when people ask you all the time, you know, what do you think about the team? I watched it like you watch it. So I get that fans' perspective now. You know, like, you're missing a lot of things when you're not in that locker room or you're not, you know, studying it every day like you guys do. You know, people think you just show up and you just talk sports. No, you guys actually do work, you know, so... Yeah, it's interesting now, though, man. It really is.
Well, one of the reasons you're here is with Tickets for 100 Years. Tell us what that initiative is, what you're doing with the league.
Yeah, I mean, the league is doing something fantastic for the fans. It's all about the fans, obviously. We play this game in an entertainment mode to make sure the fans enjoy it. The league is giving away 2 tickets for the next 100 years to... one fan, but to a family because they can pass them down.
Yes. Wow.
Which is awesome, man. You know, I mean, I wish I could get in that. You know, so, and I'm pretty sure if you're in Green Bay, you go home, you can win those tickets, but you still have to get on a late away today.
Right, right.
That's crazy. But, you know, but yeah, the league is joining with players and just going to be doing stuff all year long. They can hashtag NFL 100 contest. And on Twitter or Instagram, if I'm sure that's right, at NFL to apply for it. You know, just showing that they fandom, showing they're crazy fans, they love the game, why they love the game.
Good
you
stuff.
You know, and why they spend it with family. Myself, you know, I grew up at the park. I'm a park baby. You know, I spent a lot of time with my dad at the park, you know, playing ball. He coached me. I coached my son, trained my nephews, and that's what it's about. It's about really... that family time. You know, you get to spend that family time at a game.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.